From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. As New Hampshire begins to reopen slices of the economy, parents called back to work may have to make new childcare arrangements. While some daycare centers serving essential workers remained in operation during the pandemic, many providers shut down. Now some are planning on resuming their work, although their timetables for opening for non-essential workers vary. That's because childcare centers have a lot to work out before their doors open, gauging what the demand will be, putting new health procedures in place, and figuring out staffing. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at childcare, and we begin with Chris Tappan. She's Associate Commissioner of the Department of Health and Human Services in New Hampshire. And Chris Tappan, welcome. Good to have you.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, I want to start with a question we received on NHPR's listener survey, Jane, who asks, what are the rules for childcare centers right now with stay-at-home 2.0? Jane says, which centers are allowed to be open and who is allowed to send their kids? And Jane, it's a great question. Go ahead, Chris, please.
Sure. So, Laura, I'd like to start with saying I'm grateful to be here to have the opportunity to talk about childcare. It's such an important topic. Childcare is so essential to our economy and to the health and well-being of New Hampshire's children and families, and frankly, to the communities in which they live. I'd like to take a moment to recognize how difficult and disruptive the COVID-19 pandemic has been for childcare providers and for parents and for children, too. Prior to COVID-19, our childcare system in New Hampshire did have some challenges related to issues like accessibility, affordability, and childcare pay for professionals as well. And COVID-19 has unfortunately magnified those challenges. When we talk about the childcare system in New Hampshire, we need to recognize it is complex. Childcare includes childcare centers, which can be nonprofits, they can be for-profits, they can be faith-based. We also mean Head Start and early Head Start, family childcare providers, after-school programs, and day and summer camps as well.
So a whole panoply of providers, Chris. Yeah. So who can be open right now and who can send their kids? For a while, it was just limited amounts of centers could be open and only to essential workers. So what's the story right now, as Jane asks?
Great. So over the last couple of years, we have built some really deep and broad partnerships across childcare. And we had conducted a needs assessment and really came to understand these challenges and built relationships prior to COVID. What we were able to do, Laura, in a very short time is the governor on March 26th established the Emergency Childcare Collaborative, which set a framework for us to stand up the Emergency Childcare Program. So currently we're operating under that Emergency Childcare Program. What we've done, we initially started with about 125 programs that applied to this effort. They completed an application, takes about 15 minutes online, asks a variety of questions related to their center dynamics, their staffing, what ages of children they can take, what kind of needs they may have for supplies and those kinds of things. I'm excited to share with you that today we actually have almost 400 programs that have received that designation. We've actually increased over 100 just in the last week once the governor announced the expansion of other industries to come back to work. These programs, once they're accepted, have been eligible to receive not only weekly incentive grants that have been targeted at their ability to increase wages for childcare workers, but also to support their operational needs, particularly supplies, supplies that they need for cleaning and maintaining a safe environment.
So just to be clear, the centers that are now allowed to be open, and I'm glad Jane asked the question because, you know, things are shifting so quickly. So you're saying, Chris, that today we have 400 programs that have applied for the ability to be open? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, we have 395 programs that have actually received the designation as of this weekend. 291 of those centers are currently open, and they're serving around 6,000 children. And we estimate that we actually have about 1,000 additional vacant slots. The challenge, as I mentioned earlier, is that accessibility is factored in for a variety of things. So accessibility is how old is your child? Where is a local daycare center? What is the proximity of that to your workplace, which could be shifting during this time of COVID. So
right.
certainly having this availability is great, but what we plan to do is continue to use a couple of different sets of data to make sure that we're lining up the reopening or expansion of the childcare programs and systems to be in line with what people's needs are. So we have been working for the last year or so with New Hampshire Employment Security, really digging deeply into economic mobility and how to help parents go to work and make sure that their kids are in safe, stable, and nurturing environments. And obviously, childcare is key to that. So over the last couple of weeks, we've actually dug deep with New Hampshire Employment Security into data that they have from individuals who filed for unemployment. What are their childcare needs? And they've been able to share with us some really important data that helps us understand things like we learned that 26% of all grocery store employees actually have childcare needs. And when you couple that with the wages that are often in groceries and other kinds of similar industries, we know that accessibility and affordability could be challenges. So we've really targeted our incentives for the providers. We're also dedicating the funding that we have available right now through the federal government, through the CARES Act, towards also paying co-pays for parents and actually keeping childcare scholarship slots open in childcare centers, even when children aren't attending right now.
So you're trying to make it work financially.
We want to keep our programs open.
I'm just trying to clarify. So you're trying to make it work financially, recognizing that someone who works at a grocery store right now, they may be on unemployment. If they went back to that grocery store and they had to pay for childcare, it'd be better for them to stay on unemployment. Is that what you're saying, Chris?
That's one of the challenges. And so we're really trying to look at all the options by funding the providers, by recognizing their need to pay their staff reasonable wages, and then also to look at employees who are returning to work or maybe experiencing childcare needs for the first time. So we know that in our healthcare workforce, oftentimes individuals, maybe a two-parent or two-partner home, one works once during the day and one works at night. They may not have that flexibility now. So along with businesses who are helping out with that, we're also helping out to pay the child care fees.
So speaking of essential workers and healthcare workers, for sure have been essential from the start. And as you said, many child care centers remained open to serve that population. To getting to our listeners' second question, who is allowed to send their kids now? For example, some retailers are opening up partially. If I work in retail and I've been called back to work and I want to go, am I now allowed to send my kids to a child care center?
So under the emergency child care program, programs are eligible to serve essential workers and then any additional workers that have been identified in the follow-up emergency order. So emergency order number 40 identified those additional industries. And yes, those individuals can also send their children to child care.
You know, what's interesting, Chris, in Vermont, the governor said that child care centers for non-essential workers, again, can open up June 1st. In Massachusetts, it's the end of June. Wow, June 30th. So it doesn't sound like, Chris, New Hampshire has a specific date.
We are open. We were not one of the states that ever closed child care, and that enabled us, frankly, to keep really some child care access open and available across the states. And now our ability to expand back and really just move as best as we can, move back into what is the normal functioning we need with the child care system, that's what our intention to do. I say that, though, with a recognition, Laura, that our child care providers face some challenges with the new CDC guidelines that they're needing to follow in terms of ensuring a safe environment. We do expect them to have needs. So we're looking to potentially use the funding that we have available through the CARES Act for stabilization and recovery grants and to really focus on the infrastructure that they may need to help to coordinate care in a new and in the ways that we were talking about before COVID, but really are accelerated now.
So they'll need some assistance from the state, and it sounds like they're going to get it with all the new health protocols they'll have to put in place, Chris, just from basic cleaning supplies to maybe even reconfiguring their classrooms so that there aren't too many kids in one space. That seems to be what you're talking about.
Exactly. And we want to do everything that we can do. And again, our system is complex. So not all the funding comes from the Department of Health and Human Services. Our Department of Education in New Hampshire actually contributes significant funding, primarily to school-based programs that are before and after school. So through their 21st century funding that they have for learning community centers, there is a potential for about 60 of those programs to be open and available as well. So we're partnering with them. We're also, again, partnering with business and partnering with philanthropy. The New Hampshire Charitable Foundation and the Endowment for Health have both been very significant partners, helping to not only operate our collaborative, which has brought resources from all of these areas right to the front door of child care centers, literally delivering to them, you know, everything that they need to for the supplies that are really critical right now, but also to provide grants direct to our nonprofit child care centers
and to our infrastructure
that's needed
sure.
as well.
Well, I have one last question for you, Chris, and you piqued my interest when you said one of the types of childcare centers is 21st century. That's 21C, right? That operates through public schools for sort of after school care and so forth.
Yeah.
So how does that work? Because, and I'm familiar with 21C, it does a lot of great work here in Concord. Schools are closed. 21C, I thought, was associated with schools. So how is that going to work?
So we're working in conjunction with the Department of Education, and really where we've been up until just a week or so ago when the new emergency order came out, is that we've been looking to negotiate demand, right? Where is the demand for childcare? Where's the need? So now as we look towards particularly over the summer, and with some schools choosing to close sooner in mid-May, we actually are working really closely with the Department of Education, and they're working with closely with the array of schools that use the 21st century to actually consider opportunities potentially to establish childcare or reestablish childcare at those school locations, which we think could be of a great benefit to students and parents.
Sure. Well, and I know everybody is wondering about the summer, what's going to be open, what isn't, what kids are going to do once school is out soon. Chris, we could have talked a lot more. I have three great guests who all work directly in childcare. So I'll let you go for now, but let's talk again. Thank you very much for being with us.
All right. Thank you.
That's Chris Tappan, Associate Commissioner of New Hampshire's Department of Health and Human Services, and we are talking about child care this hour in The Exchange. Let's hear your stories, your questions, your concerns that you have about this. As more Granite Staters possibly go back to work, they may need more child care, and we're finding out what the landscape might look like for them. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. And with me for the rest of the hour are Mary Ann Barter. She oversees six centers as executive director of Merrimack Valley Daycare Services in Concord and Blueberry Express in Pittsfield. Mary Ann also serves on the New Hampshire Child Care Advisory Council. Also with us, Amy Brooks, executive director of the Early Care and Education Association representing the Upper Valley, and Nicola Marsh, director and co-owner of the Learning Tree in Londonderry. And a big welcome to all of you. And Mary Ann, I want to start with you. Several of your centers have been open all along, considered emergency childcare, serving families of frontline workers, as Chris Tappan and I were just talking about. What's that been like for you, Mary Ann, and for your staff to keep seeing children and families during that very uncertain time?
Well, first, thank you for having me on the show. It's been interesting. The first month was fairly awful. We were sort of winging it for, you know, the first month or so when you're trying to figure out what's going on. And we every day would bring a new sort of set of challenges. And I don't think there was a childcare provider in New Hampshire that was getting any sleep at all in March. And then after that, it just sort of got normal. We certainly are serving far less children than we have in the past. That does have a huge economic impact on our program. To be perfectly honest, it never occurred to me to close. We knew that we were serving essential personnel. We knew that they were going to need childcare for their children. And from our perspective, it was just a matter of figuring out the best way to make that happen. Luckily, the bulk of my staff decided to stay on and they didn't feel like they needed to sit this out, although some did, and that was fine. And somehow it just sort of worked out. And now we're having kind of the reverse problem, which is that people are starting to come back to work, and how is that going to work, and how are we going to meet that new set of challenges?
Sure. And what are some of those challenges, Mary Ann? You mentioned that no childcare leader slept at night in March. What's keeping you up at night now?
Money. I am absolutely hemorrhaging money.
Really?
The economic impact. Blueberry Express is a relatively small center in Pittsfield, has average daily about 30 children, and our losses are around $2,000 a week.
Because people are just pulling their kids.
Pulling their kids, and the class size, we're restricted by COVID guidelines to have class sizes that are, or group sizes that are less than 10, and that includes the teacher. So if you have a classroom that usually has 12 children, but now with one teacher, now can only have 9 children with one teacher, that's 3 children you're not serving. And then at $200 a week, that adds up very quickly. And if you're a larger program like Merrimack Valley and Concord, and you have multiple classrooms where that's happening, you can imagine the economic impact on your program is just enormous. So that's definitely keeping me up. And then the second thing is really safety. We've been in this great protective bubble where kids have gone to daycare and they've gone home, and to daycare and home, daycare and home, back and forth. And now it's going to be daycare and home and the hairdressers and possibly a restaurant and possibly shopping. And, you know, you worry a little bit more about what's coming into your center.
So that's interesting.
Kind of things that keep me up.
Well, Nicole, how about you? You closed your center March 16th when the pandemic really hit, and with lots of young families in Londonderry, I'm sure that was very hard. Nicole, you've scheduled now a June 1st reopening date. What factors are you weighing, Nicole, as you make those plans?
So we've been communicating very regularly with our families, seeing who's, you know, interested in returning, who needs childcare, when they're comfortable with returning. So we communicate with them weekly, and we've started to hear that people really, they do need to get back to a normal routine. They do need care. So we feel like it's time that we get the procedures and protocols into place and start, you know, returning to a new normal for us. And also financially for us as a center, it is something that, you know, it is time that we need to get back to work here. So,
yeah, you need to bring some revenue in. So what sorts of procedures and protocols are you looking at, Nicole?
So we're looking at, unfortunately, we're not going to be welcoming any visitors, tours, or even our parents. So they'll be all dropping at our main door. We'll also be temping all the children and all our staff upon arrival every morning.
Taking their temperatures,
Yes. Yep. So everyone needs to be at a certain temperature under in order to enter the building. Obviously, you know, debating about masks for the staff and for the children, the cleaning protocols that we're going to have in place. How we're going to mitigate risk to the children while they're in our care, so we don't combine classrooms, which is a huge, you know, issue with scheduling with our staff. So there's a lot of things that are in play right now that we're trying to figure out before that June 1st date.
Wow, that's a lot of extra steps. I feel for you, Nicole, you know, taking temperatures and figuring out masks and, you know, a much stricter drop off, which is kind of sad. I remember when my kids were in child care, you know, I'd drop them off and sometimes they say, hey, can you look at this painting I made yesterday? You know, so.
Yeah, and that's what we pride ourselves on. We pride ourselves on that parent piece and the family piece and that part of us in the community. You know, that's something that we're all really missing at this time.
So what about demand, Nicole? Are you thinking that you'll be pretty much back with the same families or at half capacity or what?
Well, we're not going to be at full capacity. So we've been surveying our parents and they've been really forthcoming with information. And we've actually lost a substantial amount of children that are typically enrolled with us. People aren't comfortable coming back yet, or they have older children that they need to be homeschooling. So they're going to be staying home. So that's going to, you know, obviously have a fairly large financial impact on us. But we do have those families who do need care and who would like to get their child back into a normal routine and who are essential workers. So we need to make sure that we're there for them.
Wow. So Amy, to you again in the Upper Valley, what are providers in your area weighing as they make these decisions whether to reopen, and if so, how?
Good morning, Laura. This has been very difficult for the centers that have remained open as well as for the centers that have decided to close. Again, the financial impact, we're working on a financial consulting support team that we've offered our first cohort of 15 centers to really dig in and help them assess the financial impact and make sure that they're carrying out their PPP responsibilities and be able to come out of that without owing money. But I think the biggest thing right now that really holds them back is the 10 people per room. restriction. So that is four walls and a door. So if you have an open concept center that may be able to have two small groups in there, you're restricted to just 10 people. We're looking to see if that's going to be changing for June 1, and that will really change the dynamics and look and make centers look at the families that they can conserve. One of the biggest issues I talked to, we began reopen forums in the Upper Valley just for the Upper Valley centers focused, and their concern is not being able to take all their families back. And, you know, which families would not be able to get their children back into care when they need to get back to work. So the 10 person per room restriction seems to be very much highlighted.
And that includes, Amy, staff and children. That's not 10 children per room. That's what, 8 kids and 2 staff?
Depending on the age and the ratio, it varies, but it's 10 people, no more than 10 people in 4 walls and a door.
And are some of the childcare centers that you help out, Amy, getting any of the subsidies that we heard about earlier from Chris Tappan?
Yes, we've been working with the open centers to make sure that they have accessed everything through the stabilization opportunities that the states are giving and the supplies that the state has been shoring up the New Hampshire centers very well with. And we're doing some regional work as well with generous funding from the Couch Family Foundation, who's been amazing, being able to nimbly respond to this issue way back in March. But I think the big thing for parents that are listening, that you're going to see some of the things that Marianne was talking about and Nicole was talking about the drop-off, may need to restrict to certain times of the day, so there isn't traffic in the parking lot with, you know, children waiting to have their temperatures taken. It's going to look a lot different, you know, not bringing personal items. The children may not be able to bring their toys and their teddy bears like they used to. And those types of things are really going to change the landscape from when they were there last.
Wow. You won't be able to bring your special blanket for nap time? I think that would not have gone well when my kids were little. Is that what you're saying, Amy?
Well, some of those restrictions will depend on the center and what the new criteria look like as the state prepares to roll out reopening. But right now, we're trying to minimize surfaces that cannot be cleaned. The centers are turning their some of their cabinets around, so they don't have as many surfaces to clean. That's the other thing, is that most of the centers I've talked to are closing early, so that they can do a deep cleaning each night of all surfaces and all of the materials. So you may see your center not being open till the regular time so they can get those deep cleanings in.
Wow, just like what the grocery stores are doing, closing earlier so that they can do those deep cleaning. We've got lots of questions already lined up from our listeners, all of you. So we'll go to those after a short break. When we talk about childcare, coming up in just a moment, we'll talk about social distancing and how that might work when you're working with very young children. And we'll talk more about what you all are hearing from parents. You can join us with an email exchange at nhpr.org or a phone call 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, childcare. As some non-essential businesses begin reopening this month, workers with young children may need childcare. We're asking, will they be able to find it? And what will it look like? Let's hear from you. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook, tweet us, or call in 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Marianne Barter. She oversees 6 centers as executive director of Merrimack Valley Daycare Services in Concord and of Blueberry Express in Pittsfield. Also, Amy Brooks, executive director of the Early Care and Education Association, representing the Upper Valley, and Nicola Marsh, director and co-owner of The Learning Tree in Londonderry. And all of you, write to our listeners, and Jackie is calling in. Welcome, Jackie. You're on the air.
Hello there. Can you hear me, Laura?
Sure can. Go ahead, Jackie. Welcome.
Thank you. So thank you for this program. And I just wanted to have the speakers address the fact that it was mentioned that there's about 400 programs open right now for the emergency childcare programs, but back in February, there were over 788 programs open, serving with a licensed capacity of over 46,000. So I am greatly concerned about how many programs are still not open and really making sure that the ones that are open can stay open. I heard Marianne talking about bleeding money. That's something I've certainly have heard. I work with Early Learning New Hampshire in the state. Certainly heard that we have diminished capacity, and so they still have the fixed costs like mortgage, rent, property taxes. So really encouraging those stabilization grants as small businesses. So I'd like to hear their thoughts about the need for grants, for whether they're nonprofit or privately owned. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Jackie, for calling. And Marianne, you serve on the New Hampshire Child Care Advisory Council, and you talked earlier about the severe financial pressures that many centers are under. So go ahead, please, Marianne.
Sure. I mean, first of all, we're in the business of taking care of families, and I think none of us have gotten into this field for the money. But I will say that we are small businesses, and ultimately I'm a nonprofit, so there are some community supports for me, but most of childcare facilities do not have financial support from the community to help run. And so ultimately what happens is the same things that happens with restaurants and the same thing that happens with your local bookstore, which is, you know, can I afford to open tomorrow? Can I afford to pay my staff? And my biggest concern, I think, with all of this is, you know, there's this short-term sort of nightmare scenario that we're going through that hopefully we'll get through relatively quickly. But a year from now, what does childcare look like? I mean, if there's people clamoring to go back to work, I know before COVID, my wait list was a mile long. Everyone I spoke to had a wait list that was a mile long. And what happens if at the end of this, there's much less supply than there used to be and the demand remains consistent or it gets higher? What does that do? That will, I mean, just law of supply and demand, does that drive up prices to the point where only the very wealthy can afford childcare? I mean, the impact on our field could be felt for years to come. And that's really what I worry about.
Wow, so there was a shortage of childcare even before this all started. And you sound concerned, Marianne. Yeah, right. So, and Amy, to that point, you know, Marianne and Jackie are absolutely right. New Hampshire's childcare sector was struggling even before this pandemic hit with staffing issues and long waiting lists, as Marianne just said. How do you think, Amy, that reality has been affected by this pandemic and all the related closures?
I think that, you know, our biggest concern is for financial stability for the centers in the Upper Valley is definitely the understanding what their gap is and understanding how COVID impacts their budget. All of the centers I've spoken to recently did not know how long they could go on. And we just really don't want to lose any slots. We were short in the Upper Valley as well. And we want to make sure that all centers come back as strong as they possibly can. I think one of the things that really stood out to me is back on April 2nd in one of our updates for New Hampshire Early Childhood Advisory Council was that 213 at that point, 213 centers had applied to be the emergency childcare programs. 185 of those were for-profits. And, you know, you consider for-profit, the dynamics of funding for a for-profit, and you wonder how they're going to fare through this. You know, what on the other end will they be able to access beyond the CARES Act to make sure that they can come back stronger, but, you know, within these very strict guidelines. You have additional staffing requirements due to the lower ratios, due to having someone taking temperatures, due to the extra cleaning procedures. So I think that it's a very scary situation. And I'm hoping that we, through our financial consulting cohort of 15 centers, we can get a sense of what that gap is and be able to target funding to these centers so that they can come back and we don't lose any slots.
Wow. So, Amy, are you saying that even though you might have fewer kids initially, who need childcare for a variety of reasons. You might need plenty of staff because there are all these new requirements.
Yes, that is the reality right now. And, you know, just putting it out there to parents to be patient because things are going to look a lot different. You know, staff are doing the best that they can. They have, in New Hampshire, we have 7 additional pages of COVID guidelines for cleaning. So
For cleaning,
you know, on top of our regulations.
Pick up and drop off and temperatures and all that.
Right.
Well, Jackie, thank you for the call. Let's take another one. Alexandra's calling in from Concord. Alexandra, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I'm a parent with the CFDC. That's the Child and Family Development Center in NHTI. And I'm calling because, as you may know, NHTI is not planning to reopen the CFDC after the pandemic. And given the high demand for childcare once the state reopens, and as one of your callers or your guests just mentioned, the existing lack of spots and availability for childcare, our concern is that despite there being interest from the state to support this center, which works with babies as young as 6 weeks old, and it's also a lab school that trains other professionals in the field, so having a bigger impact throughout the state, even though there's interest from the state to potentially help with funds to reopen the CFDC, NHTI does not seem interested. So what can we do about the state of not only available childcare, but also high quality early education when state funded institutions that were created to help fill this gap originally are not even taking this call to action?
Well, Alexandra, thank you for calling. And I want to let you know, I've got a couple emails and Facebook comments about NHTI, a beloved institution, and one, as you said, that plays an important role in creating the workforce of the future. So we don't have somebody from that facility on the show with us now, but I will throw that to you, Marianne, since you work on the advisory council. The role that this center in particular played, not only in providing childcare, but also as a lab school.
And actually, it's not necessarily specific to NHTI. Several lab schools have closed over the last few years, including Plymouth State University has discontinued their early education program. And I know that several community colleges have also discontinued their lab schools. And about 5 years ago, Perkins funding, which is federal funding that would go and run early childhood programs in high schools to kind of prepare the next generation workforce, those stopped being used for early education also. So we went into, I would say the early childhood went into the COVID-19 crisis. For us, it's just been, you know, an avalanche of bad heading in our direction. We've had a limited amount of people going into the field. Wages are low in the field. So the people who end up choosing this as their career path often have to subsidize their own incomes. And I am very sad about NHTI closing their early childhood program. It is an incredible loss for Concord. But it's one that we've seen mirrored all over the state. And really, we're at that point where if the state and the federal government do not start truly investing in early childhood education, we may not have it. Or what we have may look very, very different. So it's really important, I think, to shore up these programs as they exist. Jackie Cowell on the phone mentioned that there were some proposed grants from the CARES money. That would go a huge way towards shoring up programs through this crisis.
Well, Nicole, where are you getting your staff from, your trained staff? Have a lot of them come from, you know, lab centers like the one at NHTI?
Yes, we initially, when we first opened, we did receive a large amount of our staff through different lab centers. Unfortunately, we've seen less and less people apply and less qualified applicants. And obviously, schools doing away with these programs is really limiting the amount of people and the quality of people that we see applying to our program for positions. So it really does affect the quality of the care that we can offer.
Well, thank you for that call again, Alexander. Our phone number here in the exchange as we look at the future of childcare here in the Granite State is 1-800-892-6477. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. CDC.org. I want to ask all of you about plans for social distancing when centers reopen. And Nicole, to you first, please. You're all working with the very youngest children. How do you do social distancing with these kids? This seems very difficult, Nicole.
It's going to be quite a challenge because obviously children, they're children and they're in each other's personal spaces and they love to play closely to one another. They require a lot of, you know, one-on-one attention from our staff. So that is a concern for us. Our goal is to spend as much time outside this summer as we possibly can. Luckily, we have a plethora of playgrounds. We have 8 playgrounds. We have green space that we can use. So we are, you know, hoping to be able to keep the children outside, whether appropriate, obviously, to help separate them a little bit. But it is a big concern for us because when you look at a classroom, typically the kids are grouped together, they're playing, and that's an important part of their development. So it is a big concern for us of how we keep everybody separate and how we keep our staff separate as well.
Yeah, and speaking of the staff, I mean, little kids need hugs, they need reassurance,
yes.
They're feeling sad, they're feeling scared, they fall down the playground and hurt themselves. I mean, you can hug them still, right? If they fall down and skin their knees,
absolutely.
So to speak.
Yeah. We will absolutely be hugging them. And we've been training our staff and going through new procedures and protocols. So, and they have been very good about keeping themselves socially distant during this time, quarantining as necessary. So we hope that, you know, people continue to do that so that we can mitigate the risk to these children. And they do need love. That's part of the reason why they come to school. So,
well, Marian, I love your thoughts too. I mean, we all know developmentally, young children need to be held. So how do you socially distance with little kids?
It's one of those things that's good in theory and impossible in practice.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think Nicole hit the nail on the head. We're still going to hug kids. We're still going to kiss kids. It is what it is. I think for us, what we try to do is separate when we can. So keeping everyone a little bit farther away from each other at mealtimes, keeping everyone a little bit farther away from each other when we're doing projects, when they're napping, things like that, and then spending as much time as we can outdoors. But really, I believe what we need to do to stay safe is just keep it out of our building. That is our big thing. So like when parents drop off at the front door, we're going to take a temperature. We're going to ask you where you've been, what you're doing, how your child's been feeling. And if there's any question at all, we're just going to have to send those little guys home until they can safely come back. Because for us, we can do all the hand washing in the world, and we do, but really keeping it out of our building is the way to keep all of us as safe as possible.
Well, and Marianne, there's discussion now about testing everyone who works in a nursing home, given, mm-hmm. you know, that has really been where this virus has hit the hardest. Are you guys talking about testing childcare workers?
I don't know if there is a statewide initiative to do that. I know that my agency has set up a arrangement with Convenient MD to have my staff tested. It's expensive. It is what it is. But so far we've only tested people who are returning to work after self-quarantining either in a state that has hotspots or a hotspot area, or self-quarantine by themselves where they wouldn't really, if I self-quarantine with my husband and one of us is sick, the other one's going to get it. So really where there's a higher risk that perhaps they'd be bringing into the center. And I have no idea if that's going to be widened to the greater public. I know that is an expense that most childcare facilities cannot afford. It costs about $125 a test. So it's expensive.
Oh my gosh. Okay,
yeah.
Well, coming up, I've got lots of questions from listeners about safety, new policies, new procedures. You can join us with your questions and comments about changes in childcare in the Granite State. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org, and we'll be back in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. This hour, childcare. Some centers have remained open throughout the pandemic, serving essential workers. But now, as the economy begins to open up, more childcare may be needed. We're asking what factors leaders in this field are weighing and all that they have to put in place before they can reopen. And we've been hearing from you. Your questions are welcome at 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Whether you work at a center or you're a parent who is going to need childcare soon, We'd love to hear from you. Our guests are Mary Ann Barter. She oversees 6 centers as executive director of Merrimack Valley Daycare Services in Concord and of Blueberry Express in Pittsfield. Also with us, Amy Brooks, executive director of the Early Care and Education Association based in the Upper Valley, and Nicola Marsh, director and co-owner of the Learning Tree in Londonderry. And all of you, we did get some questions from listeners about safety. Jennifer sent us an email who says, I understand the need to have childcare centers open for essential workers, but I still question the safety of these centers, considering that they still cannot check every person every day. And even if they are able to test everyone, the test that's currently available is only 75% accurate, so false negatives can happen. With things the way they currently are essential workers with children more at risk than those who don't have children? Jennifer, thank you. And I think it raises a broader question about safety. And Amy, I'll turn to you on that.
Thank you for that difficult question. I know that in Vermont, they recently announced that they will be expanding their regular testing to childcare centers as they begin to reopen centers June 1st voluntarily. I know in New Hampshire that the centers that I've been in contact with, and this is in the region where we have Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center, the VA, and a few other medical centers, that there really hasn't been, there hasn't been an outbreak. The personnel and staff that are mixed in attending the centers are both essential workers in the sense of medical workers, as well as people who are doing, working in the grocery stores and the service-based industry. So, and we really haven't had anything to report as far as children outbreaks within centers. There are incredible mitigation efforts in place. And listening to the professionals at Dartmouth and in other realms that I meet with, it doesn't seem to be with what we have in place. It doesn't seem to be something that is a great alarm. And I think that parents can feel safe with the efforts that they're doing. That it's going to be okay. They're going to be vigilant. Hand washing, taking temperatures in the morning. Parents can be aware that those types of things are in place and be patient. I think that it's going to be, we'll be okay.
Yeah, although the temperature, the emphasis on temperatures that I'm hearing, from everybody these days is a little concerning, Amy, because we know now that many people are asymptomatic with this disease. So temperatures, it's one level of check, but it doesn't seem to be the only level of check.
No, and I think that catching them at the door before they enter the building and asking the questions that Nicole and Marianne were discussing, about other family members and people in the household, any fevers or any other flu-like illness symptoms, any of the other COVID-type symptoms, and then turning them back to their parents if there's any doubt whatsoever. And like Marianne was saying, just trying to keep it out of the center is the best intervention we can do. But it is what it is. And
yeah,
I know Greenough Homes
world.
In Vermont said, just do the best you can.
Yeah, well, and again, Vermont not opening up its centers until June 1st. In Massachusetts, June 30th. We got another question from NHPR's listener survey on this topic. Kate in Effingham says, if it's not safe for children to be in school, how can it be safe to go to daycare? Kate says this makes no sense. Nicole, how are you reassuring parents that your facility will be as safe as possible?
Well, we're working, again, it's a big part is just communication with them communicating with us regarding what's happening with their families. I think that for us in childcare, we have a more direct relationship with our parents than you necessarily have in public school. We see them on a daily basis. We see them multiple times a day. So the communication piece is there. We can also work with smaller group sizes so we can mitigate more risks. And it's just really important that we keep those lines of communication open so that we are ensuring that if there's been exposure, that we are asking those children to stay home. In that we can continue to follow these cleaning procedures. Obviously, everyone's nervous about it. We're nervous about going back, but we feel like you know, we have the procedures, the protocols, and we do need to get, you know, back to some form of normalcy. And this is one way to start with that.
Well, we got an email from Lindsay who says, I pulled my 16-month-old from his daycare about 2 weeks before the stay-at-home orders. We continued to pay tuition until May when the center closed temporarily. They are reopening in early June, but Lindsay says, I'm really struggling with whether to send him back. He still puts toys in his mouth. He got sick a lot over the winter. She says, I really worry about him contracting COVID if he goes back, especially since kids might be asymptomatic carriers and spreading it to his grandparents. Lindsay says, we're fortunate that we can consider alternative, yet more expensive options like a nanny, but the thought of pulling him from his teachers and friends makes me so sad. This is such a tough time, and the decision is causing me a lot of anxiety. Lindsay, I feel for you. It is tough. And Marianne, you know, kids love to go to their daycares. They love their teachers. They love their friends. Those relationships are really important. And I'm guessing developmentally, it's important for kids to be with other children. So what do you think about Lindsay's email, Marianne?
You know, honestly, it is probably the hardest question. And I know that people in the field have differing opinions about it also. So where I never once considered closing, I have many colleagues who never once considered staying open. And I think when you're dealing with something as personal as raising your child, ultimately, you have to do what's right for you. You have to do what's right for your family, and you have to decide what you're comfortable with. I mean, my concern certainly is that not everyone can afford a nanny. I mean, you do not want to create a situation where the only people in childcare are people who are, you know, disenfranchised or who are economically disenfranchised in some way. So we have to find a way where everybody feels safe and that these are these sort of touchstones for families that they're meant to be. So far, I mean, knock on wood, so far, childcare has been pretty healthy. I've not heard a lot of cases happening in childcare centers, and I've not heard a lot of cases in New Hampshire, that is, in New Hampshire of childcare's closing because of outbreaks. So far, the cautious sort of steps that we have in place to keep our kids and to keep our staff safe, so far they're working. I mean, I'm just as nervous as anybody else. I love my kids and I love my staff and I want them to all be as safe as possible, but it really comes down to, you know, your own comfort level with I guess the risk of it.
Yeah.
And some people truly do have to work. They have to work or they will, and it won't just be catching COVID. It'll be catching COVID while being homeless, while not having food on their family's table. I mean, there's a lot at stake here.
Wow, Lindsay, good luck in making that decision. It's tough. And all of you have mentioned staffing. And Nicole, I wanted to ask you about something Amy said earlier. You know, fewer families sending their kids to childcare right now, but increased needs by staff to do extra cleaning, you know, have smaller groups of kids, take temperatures. So how are you figuring out this staffing question, Nicole, when you do reopen on June 1st?
So we've been really lucky, and I think this could be an anomaly, but all our staff is ready, willing, and anxious to get back to work. So that is something really positive for us. For us personally, we feel like we'll actually be overstaffed with the amount of children that will be coming back to us and the amount of staff that we have. So for us personally, we feel like we'll be in decent shape, but we know that's not the case for many of the other centers, especially the ones that are smaller than us. We're a fairly large center. So for us, you know, we know we will have the staff, but I don't, you know, for these smaller centers, that's going to be a huge challenge for them to ensure they have somebody at the door for the children, somebody in the classroom. You know, we have been really lucky and we're very thankful for that.
Wow. Yeah, because I have heard from some other centers where staff are afraid to come back or they don't feel like they can come back because they have somebody at home who is immunocompromised and so forth. So people are just juggling all sorts of issues. So that's good, Nicole. Marianne, how about you? What are you hearing from your staff and whether they can all come back, whether you actually need them all to come back, given questions around demand?
Sure. I was fortunate to be able to get a PPP loan for both Merrimack Valley and for Blueberry Express. So we were in the fortunate position where we never even had to think about layoffs. We were happy to keep the staff we had, and we hoped they would stay on. But we also made it very clear from the beginning that if you felt like you had to opt out, you could do so. You know, you could stay home if that was better for your family. We've been fortunate in that at Merrimack Valley, out of our 35 staff, 26 have stayed on with us, and a 27th returned today. And really, the answers have been all over the place. I had one woman come back today. I've had a couple of staff who said they're not coming back until fall. It really comes back to that personal sense of what is your comfort level. I am in sort of a weird position where in the middle of this COVID crisis, I'm actually going to have to hire a couple of people. And wow, that, you know, that's scary too, because I'm inviting strangers into my home, right? So hopefully I'll find someone great who takes this all very seriously and, you know, meets the needs that we have as a center, but it's, you know, it's scary times.
And in hiring someone, are you still following the same standards in terms of, you know, you must have this certificate and this education and, you know, these skills and these certifications?
I am. Although I was not sure I would be able to. Mm-hmm. When I first placed an ad to hire, I was not quite sure who would come to me. But luckily I have gotten some terrific applicants and we've started the interviewing process, which is its own kind of bizarre sitting outside of the playground, 6 feet apart, wearing masks kind of procedure. But so far we've been lucky. An extraordinary amount of LNAs have applied for a position here. And I thought that was sort of interesting about their field too. I'm not sure what that means, but an extraordinary amount.
Licensed nursing assistants. That's what that stands for, Marianne, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Amy, what's the picture in your area in the upper Valley in terms of staffing? I'm guessing there are a lot of essential workers in your area because you have such a big healthcare sector there.
Yes, that's true. The centers that are open are struggling in various ways. Some are blessed to have their staff ready, willing, and able to come back. We have some that are just short, a few that they may be over 65 or be in some of those vulnerable criteria that they won't be returning for a while. And then there are others who have staff that just are not returning. So staffing was a critical issue prior to COVID, and I don't expect that to change too much post-COVID. I will say that going back to your caller who was, or your email person who was concerned about, you know, if the children weren't safe in public school, as a former owner of a program and a former public school teacher, the cleaning procedures are entirely different. I mean, daily light switches, doorknobs. I mean, we are constantly cleaning in early childhood programs. It's just the way young children operate. And in public school, we don't really have that. There are concerns about busing and having children being on a bus prior to getting to school and not having any mitigation done prior to them getting off the bus. So it's an entirely different dynamic between public school and early childhood programming.
So don't compare the two.
It's difficult to. It really is difficult to. I know that you ask any of those center directors, and I mean, we had to put plastic on our walls because we washed the paint off of the walls. We washed our walls so much. This is pre-COVID, so they're an entirely different creature. So I would just say that talk to your provider, ask them about their mitigation efforts, and really understand what's in place and try not to compare it to a public school scenario.
Well, last questions for you all. And Amy, I'll start with you first. What do you predict the summer is going to look like for childcare centers in your area?
Through our open forum, we have a lot of centers that are shoring up and getting ready to reopen. The financial piece is going to be a major issue, and the staffing is going to be a major issue. We are looking at many school-aged children that are going to be needing care. And if the ratios do not increase, I'm not entirely sure how they can be accommodated at this time. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see as far as that goes. I do believe that we're going to have more children in need than we will have slots.
Wow, especially since you have to keep those groups relatively small.
Exactly.
That's a factor there. How about you, Marianne? Predictions for the summer? I know making predictions these days is a risky business, but what are your thoughts?
I think I agree with Amy. I think the demand is going to far exceed the supply. And I know that Chris Tappan was speaking earlier about 1,000 spaces being available, and that worries me a little bit because, you know, you can't say it's 1,000 infant spaces. You know, 1,000 spaces is only relevant if it's in your region and if it meets your needs. So my biggest concern is that I'm going to have a whole bunch of colleagues who decide to shutter their doors, and we're just not going to be able to meet the needs.
Well, it's been great to talk to all of you. And Nicole, I know you're opening up June 1st, so I will wish you good luck with that and with the summer. I really appreciate you being with us, Nicole.
Thank you, Nicole LaMarche.
Nicole LaMarche, director and co-owner of the Learning Tree in Londonderry. Amy Brooks, it was good to talk to you too. Thank you.
Thank you as well.
Amy Brooks, executive director of the Early Care and Education Association in the Upper Valley. And Mary Ann Barter, good to have you too. Thank you for your time and good luck as this unfolds. Mary Ann Barter oversees 6 centers. She's executive director of Merrimack Valley Daycare Services in Concord and of Blueberry Express in Pittsfield. And you've been listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.